Thank you very much to the choir. Sounded awesome. So, I have not done one of these PowerPoints here before, so hopefully that goes well. If not, I've got my own up here as my notes. So I guess you're getting all Demores today, so I guess that's Demore to Marrier. I didn't make up that bad joke. Fourth grade math class, Mr. White gave me that nickname, Demore to Marrier, and I hated it at the time. And then I decided, you know what, I'm just going to own it. And so now it doesn't bother me. So the reason I'm going second and not my father, which normally it's not age before beauty, so he would have spoke, except for this, specifically this sermon I'm going to give is towards teenagers and young adults, and they had to go this for the first half and have a breakout session. So Mr. Martin decided to switch it, okay? So he asked me to speak on a topic, and this topic that he wanted me to speak on is kids leaving or kids staying, and by kids I mean teenagers or young adults, within the faith. So let's define the problem, see if this works. So I called it stay or go, your church or your parents' church. Aha. So Barna Research Group, this is a research group that researches all kinds of things for Christianity, different denominations and whatnot. Since we don't have any scientific studies specifically on Church of God or Church of God groups or anything, this is as close as I could go, but I think we're going to learn a lot from this that we can draw for us as well. So the Barna Research Group, they did a project. It was comprised of 8 national studies, okay, including interviews with teenagers, with young adults, parents, youth pastors, senior pastors, and the study of young adults was focused on those who were regular churchgoers at some Christian church during their teen years, and then explored their reasons for disconnecting with church life after the age of 15, okay? I want everybody here who's age 15 to 29 to stand up. 15 to 29. All right. That's a pretty good-sized group of people. Now, according to the research, 59% will leave. 59% of the people standing right now are not going to be still going to church, according to this research, by the time they're about 30. Go ahead and sit down. That's really bad numbers, right? Over half. So in those 8 different studies that they did, and this actually came out in 2011, cited down there at the bottom, they found not just one big reason, okay? They found 6 separate themes for why this was happening. So what I would like to do to start off, we're going to define this problem, and we're going to talk about why young adults and teens leave Christianity. We're going to go through these 6 reasons. So everybody, I'm not going to give a bunch of scriptures today. I really just have one I want to focus on. Otherwise, if I give you a bunch of scriptures when I'm talking about why you should stay in church, that's kind of like just saying, because I told you to. Right? It doesn't work real well. So we're gonna look at some other things as well, okay? So reason number one that they found, churches seem overprotective. If any of these reasons you've thought of yourself, whether you're a young person or older, I would like you to maybe jot them down, okay? I'm going to be totally honest. Some of these doubts and thoughts I've had before, absolutely have, and I had to come up with answers to these. So churches seem overprotective. Reason number one. Young people today have an unprecedented access to ideas and worldviews as well as their prodigious consumption of popular culture. Why? This is the main reason, right? We all have a supercomputer in our pocket, basically. And we can find anything we want at any time. And we can understand other people and other places and watch videos and read their blogs and understand their culture and what they believe. And it's really easy to do so, right? So, they said Christianity tends to feel stifling, fear-based, and risk averse. There's a whole lot of shout nots, right? Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. Now, you go online and look at a lot of things that's do this, do that, do this, it's fun, try this. Christians demonize everything outside of church. 23% of the young adults and teens they talked to said had those thoughts. They felt like when they went to church, all it was is everything out there is bad, everything in here is good, just don't pay attention to that. Okay? Big turnoff, 23%. Church is ignoring the problems of the real world. So these kids are looking around and they're saying, boy, there's a lot of things going wrong in this world, and all we're doing here is sitting in this church and just not doing anything. So it doesn't have anything to do with the real world. And then also, my church is too concerned that movies, music, video games are harmful. 18% of kids said that. I remember thinking that when I was a teenager. Okay? Have any of you thought that? Reason number two. Teens and 20-somethings, it's a long word, it looks like a German word, they get real long, experience of Christianity is shallow. 31% said church is boring. I sit there, some old guy comes up, I guess like me now, and just tells me a bunch of stuff. Back in my day, this, back in my day, that, you kids are bad, you need to do this. Okay, church is boring, not a lot going on. 24% said faith is not relevant to my career or interests. When you're young, what are you really focusing on, right? If you're in high school, you're getting ready to go to college or to start a job because you got to eat, so you got to make some money. And if you're in college, you're getting extra training so you can go into your career. And if you're in your early 20s, now you're in your career and you're trying to get ahead. But if you feel like Christianity doesn't have anything to do with any of that, which 24% of those that they asked, what's the point, right? If it has nothing to do with me. They also, 23% said the Bible is not taught clearly or often enough. I don't even know what they're talking about. Right? They're just up there flapping their gums. I don't know what they're talking about. It's not relevant to me either. All right. God seems missing from my experience at church. 20%. So for them, it was just a group of people sitting in a room, and that was it. God was not involved with how they felt at all. Reason number three, churches come across as antagonistic to science. I don't think there's ever been a time in history where science has played a more integral role in everyday people's lives, and people are quite educated on it. There's a lot of really dumb stuff on the internet. Don't believe everything you read. But 35% said Christians are too confident they know all the answers. Nobody likes a know-it-all, right? Nobody likes it when somebody asks a question and they just say, oh, well, because the Bible said so. Or, oh, God just did it. For a lot of people, that is not a good enough answer. It's the, because I told you so. 29% said churches are out of step with the scientific world. In school, you study lots of science, right? And there's a lot of research behind it, and they've got numbers and charts and graphs. And then you go to church and they just say, because I told you so. Christianity is anti-science. Now we're even further, we're stepping out. Christianity is too confident that they knew all the answers, and then they're like, it's kind of out of step with science, 29%, and all of a sudden 25% says they are anti-science. Science over here, we can do tests, we can see this is true, and Christianity is over here just saying, that's not true. Okay? 23% said they've been turned off by the creation versus evolution debate. And that's something that I think a lot of older people really lean on sometimes when they want to talk to young people. And 23% said they don't even want to hear it. Four, right? Yeah. Reason number four. Young Christians, church experiences related to sexuality are often simplistic and judgmental. This is how they felt. Teens and 20-somethings, Christians are struggling with how to live meaningful lives in terms of sex and sexuality. It's pervasive now, right? It's always in your face. In the age of marriage, what most studies call first marriage, actually, which is sad, but has gotten much older, okay? So they struggle with how to live up to the church's expectations of chastity and sexual purity in this culture, especially as the age of first marriage is now commonly delayed into the late 20s. So I went and found a chart, okay? This is the United States Census Bureau, okay? You can see, with the dots there, they didn't have really good numbers because there was lots of hillbillies and stuff getting married earlier, but nobody had any papers on them, so it's kind of hard to tell. Those was my kin. So, well, let's start right there, like 1950, right? The average woman was getting married by the age of 20. That's not that old, right? And what we're talking about is staying sexually pure, okay? That's not too far out of adolescence. And men, they were about 22, 23 years old, okay? He had to get a job and make some money before some lady said, yeah, I'll marry you. And then look at that trend. Men now, first marriage, 30 years old. Hey, teenagers, does that sound old? For anything? I remember when I was a teenager, 30 was ridiculously old. Not now, but it was then. And women, 28 years old. Oh, man, you're just completely washed up by 28. Oh, look at all the people in the movies. They're all 19 years old. They're all 20 years old. And by the time they hit 22, they're has-beens, right? Okay? So that's rough. That's rough. And kids go, I can't wait that long. They're saturated with it every single day. And they say, well, the church doesn't know what it's talking about, so skip it. Reason number five. They wrestle with the exclusive nature of Christianity. That is something in our culture that is going away. Being special, being set apart, anything that everything doesn't melt together and you can be exclusive, you have to be inclusive to everything, right? So they're so shaped by culture that esteems open-mindedness and tolerance and acceptance, and I'll add, of pretty much everything, right? You better accept me for who I am, no matter what. The only thing that's not acceptable is to say something's not acceptable. 29% said churches are afraid of the beliefs of other faiths. Do you know, I mean, I know lots of people who even say they're Christians, but they really tend to dabble into a lot of Eastern religions too and pull things from that because they like the way it sounds and like the way it makes them feel. Okay? And they're like, well, why is my church afraid of certain things from Taoism or Buddhism or Taoism or anything like that? 29% said they feel forced to choose between my faith and my friends. If your faith has some you shalt nots and some of your friends do some shalt nots, now you feel like you have to choose between them. And relationships are extraordinarily important to especially teenagers as they're trying to build their own identity. Their identity is the group many times. And then 22% said church is like a country club just for insiders. It's a good old boys club, right? Sit around, talk about how we're better than everybody else and all those sinners out there. Okay. And this is the last of the sixth. The church feels unfriendly to those who doubt. They say the church is not a place that allows them to express doubt. Say, I'm not sure about this. I don't understand. They feel like they can't do that. Not being able to ask my most pressing life questions in church. They don't feel safe. Significant intellectual doubts about their faith. But they don't feel like they can talk to anybody about it. And they said their faith does not help with depression or other emotional problems they experience. Teenagers these days have more depression and more of a lot of those mental health issues that come with that and for other reasons than pretty much any other time in history. There's a lot of scientific information on that. You can go read up on it. It's really interesting. But then they feel like they can't talk about it at church. It doesn't help. And when you feel overwhelmed by depression or something like that, it's crushing. Everything else goes away. And they don't have a safe place at church they can go talk about that. Now, these are going to be some of my observations that I've had growing up in the faith, and why some of the people that I know left, right? I'm a PK. I'm a preacher's kid. My dad was a pastor from the time I was, I guess, born. He just retired, but he's still a preacher. So I'm PK. Who are the worst ones usually at church? Oh, I was going to say cops' kids. No. Yeah, there's a lot of PKs. And I have plenty of friends who are PKs as well, and they're not around anymore. And I've talked to them, and I watched the progression as they pulled away. The thing that I saw why so many of them left was hypocrisy. And they couldn't wrap their minds around. There's right, and then there's people who's supposed to be following right, but they don't always do it right, but that doesn't change what right is. I don't know why I'm using my left to say right. I shouldn't have done that. I guess it's your right. But many, many, many of my friends left because they looked around and said, you know, if we're supposed to be the people of God, we're not acting like it many times. So I don't believe we're the people of God. Maybe there is no God. Maybe there is. Maybe there isn't. I don't know. But this place, I'm out. That has happened many, many times. I've watched it happen. Second reason, pull of relationships. Human beings are relational creatures, right? None of us want to be alone. I mean, sometimes we kind of be alone, especially when we got small kids like we do. We just want to hide. But none of us want to be alone for any extended period of time, right? The reason we're here today is because we want to have a relationship with God. We're searching for that relationship. That's why we answer the calling. That's why we come to church. All of that is in order to help us have a relationship with God. We were designed to have that. But we also come because we want to have a relationship with other people. And we're told to do it. But we want that relationship. Now, many people get into close relationships with friends or family or romantic relationships with people who do not help hold them within their faith. I mean, Solomon's a great example, right? He was smarter than any of us sitting in this room, but it was a bunch of relationships that drug him away. And I have seen that, and I know all of you have seen that. And that's not just young adults, right? There's plenty of older people who've done the same thing. You know, there's a lot of 30 and 40-something-year-olds that I know who've left even not that long ago. And it breaks your heart. But a lot of times, that'll be because of relationships. The third one that I've noticed is never caught the vision. If you don't know where you're going, you'll just wander around, and you won't stay on the path. You'll wander off. You know, it's squirrel, and you'll head that way. You'll see a bright light. The fall holy days are coming up, right? That's the part of the vision that I like to focus on right now. This world is real messed up. When you're young, you haven't necessarily seen a lot of that yet, right? When you get older, you've had a whole lot more friends and family die or bad things happen. Just the years of life, you've seen it more. And you understand more how much we need something to fix all that's going wrong. When you're young, things are still a little bit more rosy, right? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to be awesome at this. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to get a good job. I'm going to have a sweet car. I'm going to have an awesome family. I'm going to travel. And that's great. And do that. But there's some really hard things that come in life too. And if you don't have a vision of where you want to go, the thing that's going to fix all those problems for everybody else, because we're all actually doing pretty good in here. We all got a place to sleep tonight. We all got some money. We all got some food. We have some sort of transportation to get here. Nobody's trying to kill us or break in our house every day. The government's not falling apart around us. We don't have war going on around us. We're all doing pretty stinking good. But there's a lot of people who are not. And we need to catch that vision for them even more than ourselves in some ways, of stuff has to get fixed, and we're not going to be able to do it on our own. We've been trying to do that for thousands of years. We're not very good at it. So we got to catch that vision. So who makes a difference, right, in deciding whether people are going to come or go? I'm going to talk about three, two of them on this slide. The church. So the church is in different ways. So we got organization or the ministry, right? That's very important. How the ministry acts, how the organization acts, the programs they put together for the youth, that's important. It is. But I think it's the least important of these three that we're going to talk about. Go to camp. Build relationships with people of like mind. At the feast, meet other kids, other young adults that are similar to you in our beliefs. Do that, okay? The organization, the ministry help facilitate a lot of that. That's great. The ministry is also going to teach a lot. There's all kinds of stuff online you can go read. Do that. Excellent. But there's also the individual members, okay? There's a whole lot of people sitting out here, including myself, who are not in the ministry, and we are not part of the organization as far as we don't work for the church, right? We can help with the young adults. We can help with the teens. Build those relationships with them. Show them a good example. Become a mentor to them. I know I've had a few in my life that were older than me that I got to know that really helped me a whole lot through some hard times, through some good times, and just through the normal times. And I learned a lot from them. Any one of us can be that for any one of these kids. Wow, talk about 20-somethings. This is kids. I don't like this. Second group, even more important than the church, parents. You're going to spend more time with your kids than anybody else. You're going to have more influence over those kids, especially when they're little, and it gets a little bit less as they get older, but that's fine. They're growing up. You must try your best to teach them how important and how great and awesome and fun and exciting what this what the reasons we are here for is, how awesome God is. My parents did some really good things. I have fantastic parents, and I really appreciate them. They really helped teach us that the Sabbath and the holy days are special things. They're something to look forward to. Mom always made a special Sabbath dinner on Friday night. We'd have Sabbath juice, that Welch's grapefruit sparkly juice. We thought that was the greatest thing ever. You know, but it was something we didn't have every day. Right? Couldn't afford it anyway. But it was great. And then they would talk to us and they'd say, hey, you know, these other kids, that's kind of fun. They have Christmas on one day. But how many days do we get when we go to the Feast of Tabernacles? Right? And they made it special to us. And they would tell us things like, when the kingdom comes, you can have a pet tiger and you can ride him around. That was the coolest thing ever when I was six. And when I got baptized, I realized I'll become a spirit being at that time, and I was a little sad I won't get my tiger. I said, oh, wait, I'll just make one that flies, and that'll be even more fun. But it was special to me. I looked forward to it. And then let your kids stand up for the faith. If you shelter them too much, if they never have to answer questions to anybody else, if they're never stuck in a hard situation, they won't be able to do it when they get older. I know I had to do that at school. I only recently learned there was other crazy stuff going on behind school. They didn't want to let us go for the feast and stuff that my parents were dealing with. But I didn't know. But I had to go to all of my teachers from the time I was pretty young and be like, okay, I won't be here on these days. Can you please give me my homework ahead of time? I'm going to the Feast of Tabernacles. You're doing what? And I had to explain it to them. I wasn't very old when they made me start doing that. You know, I got my little forearm saying, hey, the church is actually doing this. He's not making it up, right? So I had to stand up for my faith. And there were times that was hard. That was real hard. And I did music a lot in school. My first degree is actually in vocal performance. And the big concert always, after the first semester, you know, at the end of the first semester, is always Christmas. Always. Because that's what everybody wants to hear, right? You know, most of the audience, they want to hear Christmas songs done. And so here I am. We'd sing one song that wasn't. They'd sing, I come back. I mean, everybody saw me walk off the stage like a weird kid and then come back when they just sang White Christmas. Why is that kid doing that? I don't know. He's weird. So that was hard. And that's in front of a lot of people, but it taught me. It taught me to stand up for my faith. But who makes the biggest difference? What do I mean by the buck stops here? It's you. As an individual, no one can do this for you. People can help you. People can teach you. People can guide you. No one can do it for you. Philippians 2:12. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, look at that as you've been a kid, now you're 16, 17, 18 years old. You've been coming to church. You've been obeying. But not in my presence only, okay? So when nobody's looking, you're still doing it. But now much more in my absence. While you're at school and your parents aren't around. While you're at that first job you ever had out of college. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. You have to do the work yourself. You ask God, I need help. You pray to him. You ask other people to help. But you've got to stand up on your own two feet and say, this is what I believe and I'm doing it. This is hard work. So you got to listen to others. There's a wealth of knowledge on how to live this life sitting in this room. You got to read, not just your Bible. Read all kinds of things. Sometimes read dissenting things just so to learn the way the argument comes from the other side. Because it's hard to fight an argument if you don't know where they come from. Ask questions. That's put on you. That's not me up here preaching at you. You go find somebody to ask a question. Hey, you know what? I don't understand this. So go ask a question. Find people you trust and look up to and talk to them. Okay? And then think. Use your brain. We live in a time of feelings, right? How I feel trumps anything. It's more important than fact. It's more important than what happens. It's just how I feel, okay? How dare you hurt my feelings? I tell my oldest daughter all the time, she'd be like, I don't want to do that. It makes me mad. I'm sad. I don't care. I told you to do it. Because I know what's best for her. At least I think I do, because I asked my wife and she said it was okay. And then the first six reasons that I gave from that study, right? They went and talked to people who left and they got answers from them. And that's fine. That's good. And if those, you know, people want to leave, okay. But talk to those who didn't leave. I guarantee you that there are people sitting in here and that you'll meet that have gone through some crazy stuff. Some of them had good parents. Some of them had terrible parents. Terrible parents. Some of them have been abused. Some of them have left the church for a while and been crazy themselves and then came back. Probably whatever it is you're feeling and going through, there's multiple people sitting in here who've dealt with very similar things. You can learn from them. Okay? But talk to people who didn't go. Say, I know you probably had doubts too at some point. How did you work through those? Because I'm having a problem in this area. And there's somebody out there who can help you, but you have to go and look for it, okay? So talk about me for a second. Everybody is a little different in the things that make them tick, right? Some people, they'll tell you about, oh, I knew because of certain feelings I had that this was the life for me, and I believed in God, I had all this faith, and I experienced it in the relationships I had. That's not me, okay? So if that's how you feel, I mean, I'll talk to you about it, but I may not be the best person. For me, when I was younger and I was like, listen, I got to get to the base of this, and I got to think about this. Science actually really helped me to solidify my faith. First law of thermodynamics, we're going to nerd out here for a second, also known as the law of conservation of energy, states that energy cannot be created or destroyed in an isolated system. Okay, so if you have an isolated system, we'll call the isolated system the universe, right? This was my thought process. And there's nothing, right? And then, and now there's energy and mass, and it's all in a tiny ball, and it's spinning, and then it blew up. Wait a minute, hold on. If it's an isolated system, where did the energy and the mass come from? Where did it come from? There has to be something outside of this isolated system, which is the universe, that created mass and created energy. Otherwise, it doesn't work. The first law of thermodynamics doesn't work, right? So I said, okay, something had to start all of this. Because you can't just start with a ball of mass and energy and it's spinning. Where did this come from? Second law of thermodynamics. There is a natural tendency of any isolated system to degenerate into a more disordered state. Okay, we'll give you the ball of mass and energy and it's spinning, it blows up. Okay. This law says it should degenerate, it should not become more organized, it should not become solar systems, it should not become planets, it should not then become life forms that are extraordinarily complicated, more than we can even fathom. There aren't Rolex watches falling out of the space because they just happen to come together, and those are nothing compared to the individual cell. That doesn't make sense. The natural tendency of an isolated system is to degenerate, okay, into a more disordered state. That didn't happen. It became more ordered, and there are tons of laws, right? Laws of physics. And that told me personally, there is no way, there is not something that created all this. That doesn't say right there, oh, it's the Bible and then we should be Sabbatarians. No, that's just the first step, okay? That was for me. I don't know if that's any help to you, but it was for me. And then jumping way down the line, specifically one thing that helped me to believe that the Church of God, as we know it in we're sitting here, at least is pretty correct in a whole lot of things to me, was prophecy of national alignments, right? Since the time I was a kid, we've been saying some very specific things, right? Jerusalem, stumbling block to, you know, all the nations, everybody's going to be going after them, it's never peaceful. It is never peaceful there, ever. Europe's going to rise to power. The United States will start to slough off, so will Great Britain. Those things are all happening. The Germans, we should really keep an eye on. They'll be kind of ruling Europe. Well, that's kind of happening too. I just read about how the Scots are wanting to break away from the United Kingdom, you know, and they're trying to tie it to Brexit. They had lost by a few percentage points with the referendum when they did Brexit. But now it's like 60-something percent of Scots are saying, oh, no, we want out. We want out of Brexit and we want out of the United Kingdom. That just goes further along what we've always said. We always said, you know, basically South America and Africa, not really involved in end time prophecy, but Magog and Gog, we called Russia and we called China. They were much, you know, at least China wasn't much of anything until recently. Now they kind of tell Russia what to do, but they're converging together. They're doing all kinds of joint military actions together. The Europeans are putting a military together, which they haven't had in forever. All this stuff is the stuff that they were saying back in like the 60s and people laughed at them, right? At least as the church. That makes sense to me. Say, well, maybe old man D'Amore isn't crazy, right? So those are just a couple of things for me that helped me, okay? I mean, that mean nothing, may mean nothing to you. It may mean something. But remember, accountability. Each of us will be held accountable for what we have been taught. We all have an incredible amount of knowledge that I really do believe comes from God, okay? I also know a lot of people my age and younger and a little older too, who basically said, yeah, you know, I believe this is right, but I don't really want to do it. I'm just going to kind of do my own thing for a while. You're held accountable for what you know. You don't get a pass to just be like, hey, you know, for the next 20 years, I'm just going to piddle around and do whatever I want. And then when I see things get real bad, I'm gonna punch back in. We don't get to do that. You have to do something with what you know. You can't just hang around and be like, well, I'll get baptized when I'm 50. People do that. And I disagree with it. You can't ride the fence without consequences. So we'll get this little horse on here. It's basically the same thing, right? Just showing up to church isn't good enough. If you're not going to do it, why are you here? That's being lukewarm. If you're not going to live it, why are you here? But I guarantee you, and I know I've done this, every last one of us have done that at some point in our lives. We come to church, we do the little dance, and then we go home and we do whatever we want. I've done that. A lot of those doubts that were at the beginning in those six reasons, I've thought of those. I've felt those, especially when I was younger. I've been mad at God. Anybody here hasn't been mad at God? Okay. Everybody. That doesn't mean it's we were right. We weren't. Job wasn't real happy with God. He got set straight. I know I've been set straight before. But it's okay to tell God, hey, I'm going through a hard time here. I don't know what to do. And I'm mad at you for letting this happen. That's okay. You know, you talk to your parents that way, hopefully, if you have a good relationship with them. I'm upset with you. You did this, this, or this. Especially if you had problems when you were in your childhood. It's not bad if you can to talk to them about it, if that's a possibility. Try to resolve some of that. Because when you have problems with your parents, it makes it real hard to have a good relationship with God, too. Because he's our father, right? So we all have daddy issues. But we can't ride the fence. We can't just come to church and then leave and go do what we want. Either we believe and we're or we don't. It's better to be cold than lukewarm. Final thoughts. You got to own it. Everything in life, you got to own it, especially this. No one's going to drag you into the kingdom. No one's going to drag you away from the kingdom either. If you decide this isn't for you, no one made you do it. There are people who have terrible parents that grew up in the church and they didn't leave and they got through that. It's not an excuse. Maybe your job that you wanted to do, you couldn't do. It's not an excuse. I had to quit music. I knew it was one or the other. I'm glad I did because I'd have to probably live in New York City. But I quit it. You have to own it. It is up to you. Find the time to read. Find the time to think. Find the time to talk to other people. And then if you have friends or you have family who decide, you know what, I'm out of here, don't talk bad to them. Don't talk down to them. You still love them. They just didn't make the same decision as you or I hope everybody in here makes. And that's okay. That's okay. God is so merciful. He can fix whatever. So don't worry about it. I mean, I worry. Like, my greatest fear is my kids saying, you know what, Dad, I'm out when they get older. But if they do, hopefully I did my best. But God can fix it. But they will have to own it. They'll have to make their own decision, which is terrifying because I get to make all their decisions right now. Own it, own it, own it.